For some parts of it, there's the pressure of getting ready. Presents, planning, invitations, making sure where are we going to be this year, where will the family be, will it be there, will it be somewhere else? There's another part to it though, isn't it? The excitement, the planning, the knowing that it's coming, especially for the kids, isn't it? It's just amazing to watch the kids. Christmas is coming. What are we going to get? It's going to be great. Between now and then, it's a time of waiting. Luke chapter 1, starting at verse 5. Luke chapter 1. In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah, who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife, Elizabeth, was also a descendant of Aaron. Both of them were upright in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commandments and regulations blamelessly. But they had no children because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both well on in years. Once, when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as a priest before God, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And when the time came for the burning of incense, all the assembled worshippers were praying outside. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear, but the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son, and you will give him the name John. And he will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even from birth. Many of the people of Israel will he bring back to the Lord their God. He will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah, to turn the hearts of fathers to their children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." Zechariah asked the angel, "How can I be sure of this? I'm an old man, and my wife is well on in years." The angel answered, "I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you the good news. Now, you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their proper time." Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondering why he stayed so long in the temple. When he came out, he could not speak to them. They realized he had seen a vision in the temple, for he kept making signs to them, but he remained unable to speak. When his time of service was complete, he returned home. After this, Elizabeth became pregnant, and for 5 months remained in seclusion. "The Lord has done this for me," she said. "In these days, he has shown his favor and taken away my disgrace among the people." Waiting. It's not easy, is it? Here we have a couple who have been waiting for a child for many years. As some of you know, Christine is an obstetrician, and so we've been involved in families who are trying to get pregnant. That is such a hard time. Even nowadays with things like IVF and other technologies, there's the waiting,
going to work? Is the test going to be positive or not? Oh, it's not. And the disappointment and the, what about next time? And how many shots do we get? How many times on the NHS? Well, it's three. What if two are down and this is the last one? That's a seriously difficult time. The hope, the despair, the anger, the not knowing. This picture that we have with Zechariah and Elizabeth, they're now old. How many times did they wait? How many times did they think this time? And yet their story, in some respects, is just a microcosm of a much larger story. The waiting for God to truly become king. The waiting for living in a place where justice and freedom and liberty and the ability to worship is finally here. Of course, the story of the nation of Israel 400 years ago had finally come back from being expelled, taken away, taken off in slavery. And yet it wasn't really there. Other armies had trampled through the nation. They had a small, brief time when, against all odds, against one of the most vicious political and systems that have been set up, they got their own freedom. We saw in the discussion around Scottish independence some of the fervour. Imagine that multiplied. And at last, they had thrown out the idolatrous, vicious, evil system. And yet they hadn't really got one of their own. It hadn't worked. And then into this vacuum trampled the Romans. Not particularly known for their gentleness. Not particularly known for their softness. I walked in front of the speaker, didn't I? Sorry. It's so confining, I can't go over here. I was discussing on an internet forum, as you do, with there's quite a few atheists on that forum wondering, you know, what's it like, and somebody was bringing up the thing that maybe Jesus hadn't died. So I laid out what crucifixion, scourging, crucifixion and beating would have done physically. And somebody wrote back, one of the comments underneath was, that was hard to read. Yeah. What the Romans bought, that wasn't easy to read. Wasn't easy to live on, under. And so there was this heart, this desire, this waiting. This time, will there be? And Jesus wasn't the first one that people thought, here's the Messiah. There were quite a few after Jesus, leading up to the destruction of Jerusalem. There were quite a few going, yeah, I'm it. I'm the one. Just follow me. So, waiting in this big picture, will there be one that can actually truly lead? Waiting when we don't know the outcome. Christmas is coming. It's going to come. We can't actually stop it. Christine's away at the moment. She's in Bangladesh. in 13 days she will be back. That's great. But waiting when we don't know, when will that hospital appointment come? Will I get a job? And in today's economy, we know, I think sure we all know people who have been waiting, looking, searching, finally get a job, and what do you know, they get laid off again very quickly because that one's disappeared. Will there be another one? Waiting for the house to sell, trapped in a situation that you just can't move from. Are we able to show that? We're going to have a go. Waiting for Godot is a really famous play. We're going to watch all of it in its entirety in 3 minutes. I wondered as a joke this morning if I should get the team to pretend that there was a computer problem. Just to sort of, and to see what people's responses would be. I didn't ask the team to do that. I thought it would be quite a difficult trick to pull off. We managed it. It was brilliant. I saw people looking at their watches. I saw some signs. Are we going to begin? I saw people going, great, let's chat. This is brilliant. We all wait in different ways. Let's see if we can. It's not going to work. Darn, this was the Muppets waiting for Elmo. Two of them are waiting. Elmo said he would come and play with us. But he's not here. We're supposed to wait here. What happens if he's not going to come? Well, I'm bored. I'm bored, bored, bored. What if he doesn't come at all? Well, I'd be angry. I'd be really angry. Gosh, he said he would come and yet he's not here. Waiting, waiting. That's a great line in it, waiting. Look it up on YouTube. The emotions that waiting brings to us. But it's more than just waiting. It's waiting in a time of tension where it matters. Do we feel the tension of Jesus' kingdom not being fully here? Does that matter? Do we feel that we're living in a, hang on, there is got to be something better than this? Or have we sort of said, it's pretty cool, all right? Things are pretty smooth. Until something comes along and clouts us around the back of the head. Well, that's all right, really. But even for those of us who are quite comfortable, actually, shouldn't we be feeling the tension that God's kingdom is not here? Things are messy. It might not be messy for us, but if we open our eyes, the number of believers in this world, simply for being believers, is multiplying. They are our brothers and sisters. Do we feel that? Well done. We won't go back. Yeah. The injustices. I saw a thing on Channel 4 the other day. I don't know if you noticed, looked at it, how uneven our, what people have and what they don't have. That the richest 1% and the richest 5%, what they own compared to everybody else. One of my favorite lines in the Bible is from one of the prophets who just says, you fat cows. Ah, brilliant line. And the situation there is there used to be quite
the society was quite even, quite stable. But over time, you had these really rich people and people who were becoming poorer and poorer and poorer. And the prophet lays into the wives of the rich guys. And you sort of think, hang on, is that fair? Is that because it's surely it's the blokes who sort of organize society, and surely it's the blokes doing all the business, and sure it's a very patriarchal society. And he just turns around and says, "You fat cows." Whoa. But we're all responsible for the society that we're in and the world that we're in. And I can tell you that the poverty that Chris will see in these 2 weeks is partly linked to how we live. There is a tension. Maybe we don't see it. Maybe we should get to know that tension. There's a parable. He says, pulling out the wrong one. There's a parable that's hard for us to get our heads around, but we'll try it. It's the parable of the talents in Matthew chapter 25. This is in a series of stories about when will God's kingdom finally come. And again, it will be like a man going on a journey who calls his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one, he gave 5 talents of money. That's a huge amount, by the way. 5 wads of money. To another, 2 wads of money. And to another, 1, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. Man who had received 5 talents went at once and put on his work money to work and gained 5 more. So also, the one who had 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 went off and dug a hole. And he hid his master's money. After a long time. That wasn't in there, I just made that up, by the way. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled the accounts with them. And the man who had received 5 talents bought the other 5. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 5. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man with 2 talents also came to the master. "You entrusted me with 2. See, I've gained 2 more. And his master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Then the man who had received the 1 came and said, "Master, I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown and gathered where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." The master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I've not sown and gather where I've not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him, give it to the one who's got 10. For everyone who has will be given more, and he'll have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even that will be taken away. Throw this worthless servant outside into the darkness." That's kind of a hard parable for us to get our heads around. Because we need to grasp actually what is the situation that Jesus is speaking to. I think one of the easiest ways is to think of the parable of the prodigal son, the father, this generous, fantastic father who's quite wealthy. He has a whole family system underneath him, and the whole unit works really well. That was how business was done. You have the father figure, the patron. And business is done so that patron has got his children and extended family, but also others, termed servant and slaves. Now,
we tend to go, slaves, servants, ooh, Downton Abbey, that's bad. Well, actually, Downton Abbey is bad. No, slavery, that's an awful thing. Well, actually, that was the system, and people within that could be treated as family. They were part of this whole unit, often given a huge degree of freedom. Interesting to think that Luke, the gospel writer, may well have been a slave. That's an interesting one, isn't it? He's a physician. A lot of physicians were slaves, but had huge ability to operate within that. So think of that system. Now, this father has gone away, is going away, so he's portioning out his money to those who can handle it on his behalf. And off he goes for a long time. And the point here is that that culture is vicious. That culture is business, everything is competitive, highly competitive. And the fathers, the patrons, those that operated in the top echelons, they will compete. They will eat anything that shows any sign of weakness. And here's this guy gone. And these three others are now expected to operate in that realm. This is dog eat dog. This is difficult. This is, you put a foot wrong and they'll pounce on you. They'll eat you alive. And yet you're only the representative. You're not the guy himself. Well, the guy with 5 talents does quite well. 5 wads of money. He does quite well. He's obviously able to operate there. And yet do it in a way, he knows he has to do it in a way that is true to that father figure. Now, if the father figure is the father of the prodigal son, he's generous, he's kind, he looks after people. So he would be needing to do the same. Keep that ethos running while also working well. So keep the brand, Father. Do no evil. Love God. All of that working through what he's doing. Number 2, doing the same. Well done. But number 1, doesn't feel he can cut the mustard. The 3rd one, doesn't feel he can cut the mustard. He can't operate at that level. What? Who knows why? Maybe out of fear. I can't play with the big boys. I can't stand up to them. And so what he does is just puts that money aside. He's still got to live somehow. So it's pretty obvious he's hired himself out to others. It's pretty obvious that he's left brand father and hired himself out somewhere else. Well, if this is Jesus' kingdom, this we now live in the situation that is where Jesus is not here, and yet this we are looking for his kingdom coming. Are we living brand Jesus? Do we feel that tension? Do we operate in a way that we know Jesus would operate, which includes worship? Yes. Includes being church? Yes. Includes looking after the poor. It includes looking after the downtrodden. It includes putting ourselves in situations that are going to be really difficult and actually helping those that have been unjustly charged. Helping those that where life is unjustly throwing all sorts of dirt at them. Mental health situation in this country is just going from bad to worse. The asylum situation in this country is just going from bad to worse. The iniquities in that system are just appalling. what would Jesus do? Should we be getting involved? Now, we can't get involved in everything, but we should be getting involved in some things. At present, we're between pastors. Steve's gone. And we're waiting. And it might be a case of waiting. Someone might be coming soon, or God might be saying, no, not yet. And no, not yet. We don't know at the moment. It's an indefinite period. What's our role? What can we do during this period? Wouldn't it be great if when a new person came, we would say, well, when Steve left, we had X amount of people coming on a Sunday. Now we've got even more. In this time, we've helped so many situations, a certain number of situations that were difficult. People who are in hospital, people who are needing help, people who are needing, where life is throwing rubbish at them. Together, we've stood up and helped them. In this time, we've seen a change come in the community because of what we were doing. In this time, we've worked with another church in order to do something. In this time, we've given a certain amount of money to something that really needed it. In this time, our prayer meetings have focused on and we've seen God acting in a certain way. In this time, we've partnered with a local agency to see something. The possibilities are there. Do we as a church feel that tension that this is not God's kingdom fully yet? We are about the business of the King. And that kingdom is a kingdom of justice and freedom and liberty and love. It's not fully here yet. We're about bringing that in. And the good news is, Christmas is coming. The good news is that there will be a coming time of joy and release and excitement. There will be a time when the kingdom of God is seen here in its fullness, in all that it should be. The joy that Elizabeth felt when that kid was born, when John was born. The name John means gift, by the way. When that gift of God came. The joy that Mary felt with the one who would be Savior. That will be ours, multiplied. That will be ours when Jesus' kingdom is finally here in all its fullness, when He truly is King. But we wait. We wait, hopefully, we wait well. The end, that last bit that you were talking about, Mike, the last bit, we are waiting so that, what was the last line?
Our souls will grow.
Our souls will grow and God's kingdom will come through us. There was a thing on Facebook that made me stop and look and think about it. And it was this, if I can find where I wrote it. The mark of an effective church is not how many people come, but how many people live differently as a result of being part of it. We're called to wait. We're called to wait well. We're called to live differently because we're part of His kingdom.